Brian, last question for you, Brian. Last question, and we're done. Do you believe that the restriction of ICOs would in fact be an aggregate efficiency for the market?
Efficiency.
Meaning, will we have greater outcomes of products and services for consumers with less waste?
Bitcoin uncensored finance.
But with the Bitcoin, baby.
What's up, party people? This is Chris DeRose, and with me is Brian Hoffman of Open Bazaar. Brian, let's talk ICOs today. What's the deal? Why are they going up? And who the hell's buying? You're right over there, bro.
No, I mean, I thought you were going to do like there was something there in between. Okay. No, I mean, I think these things have been going on for quite a while, right? I mean, like ICO is a clever branding strategy, but like, I mean, the idea of having an altcoin pump has been around for as many years as I've ever been in Bitcoin. So, my experience early on was just seeing them in the Bitcoin talk forums getting pumped over and over and over again. And now it's like we've professionalized it. We've turned this into, it's like the Dr. Seuss book where, they just go through the star machine and out comes another ICO. It's like, put your nickel here and they come through. For me, our experience on the side of, running an open source project as well as a venture backed business, you have a lot of questions from the community about whether or not they can get involved. And most of the time, they can't bring anything beneficial from like a programming, stance. They can't submit pull requests or code submissions. So they want to get involved by putting their money into the product or the project. And usually what happens is they want it to do it through an ICO because then they can turn around and speculate on that and get the massive returns that we're seeing on some of these ICOs. And so, we get a lot of hate mail.
Let me interrupt you. Here's what's different. Bitcoin dominance, quote unquote, is at an all-time low, which for me is a big part of my platform. And for what I see as normally being something kind of disruptive, but certainly to like the sort of Bitcoin platform that I've built. But however, none of these ICOs are even a little bit interesting in my mind in that no one's ever needed them. So I want to know is, who's buying this stuff? What are the demographics of these people? Because I don't think they're old Bitcoiners. Are they all noobs? And what kind of noobs are they?
Well, I mean, I think I was listening to the podcast you did with Michael Tidswell recently. And, you guys kind of hit it on the head was all these people are like these newcomers to the space, right? And you mentioned that like Bitcoin is like this old hat. It's kind of getting stale and nobody wants to be on that. And they can't see these massive, quad digit returns on getting involved. So, they're looking for something new. And I think that these scams or, I mean, if you want to call them scams or altcoins or ICOs or whatever you want to, name them, what they're doing is they're starting from nothing and they're turning into like, 3,500% returns in a day. And that's very attractive to these guys that are new to the space. They're looking to get rich. I mean, we were all there. So many of us came into the space just thinking we were going to get, triple or four digit returns. And so, I can see what the appeal is for newcomers. I think a lot of this is new money coming into the space. And I think all the old money is sitting on it and holding in a lot of cases. And I mean, there's traders, obviously, but I think for the majority of people, they're either using it or they're just sitting on it. I don't work in an exchange. I bet, some of the folks over at Bitfinex or these other exchanges could probably provide a much deeper insight into what kind of people are actually trading on a daily basis. But I mean, you actually did several chats with Whalepool and some others. So you kind of have a good insight.
Let me cut you off. I'm going to show you a quick video from a girl who's been making the rounds. She's been all over Twitter. She's been all over all the Telegram channels. Let's cut right to it. Let's see this video. Welcome one of the many ICO investors of 2017.
Anyways, hi, I'm Chloe. So this is my first video and I'm gonna talk to you how I got into cryptocurrency. He told me to download Coinbase, so I did. I downloaded it on my phone and I feel like that's the best wallet for beginners because it's easy, except the fees are so high. Okay, so the first day I got it, I wanted to buy Bitcoins, but I first thought that you have to buy the whole Bitcoin at a time, like one Bitcoin, $1,000. I don't have that money. And then I see that on Coinbase you have Ethereum, and I'm like, what is this? And I asked him, hey, what's Ethereum? And he's like, dude, I don't mess with that. So I'm like, nah, let's just buy some just for curiosity because I'm such a curious girl. Also, Ripple is up. Let's see how much Ripple is up. Coincap.io is the death of me. Let me tell you. All these numbers, all this red, all this green, drives me crazy. It's like, oh, is it growing? Is it not? Ethereum Classic. I see you, buddy. Ethereum is up even more than before. Oh, it's just like, it's like my baby. That's my, cutie little tiny little baby that I gotta see it grow and grow and grow and grow to the moon, baby. So people that are normal girl like me, dude, I do makeup for a living, can get into this, which is really interesting. And I want all my friends and family to get into it.
Brian, what do you think when you see that video?
I think it's disturbing on a couple different levels, but I don't know what you want.
I just want to communicate with the audience your honest answer. I'll tell you what I see when I see that. I see somebody who's financially ignorant, has very little to no knowledge of finance. I see somebody who is probably not in a position to be investing to begin with. I think she said that she was a nail tech or some such thing. And I would be surprised if she's living with her parents or some nonsense like that. What I also see is somebody who is going to lose. I don't believe them to be succeeding. And I wonder at that point when they lose what their story will be. It's certainly young enough in their life to where they'll make money. And who knows, if it's their life savings, it's not that much. But I wonder, are they going to be making complaints? Are they going to accept their losses? What do you think her story will be if and when she loses a significant, if not entirety, of her investment money?
Well, I mean, first of all, I want to say that, like, just because cryptocurrencies and these ICOs exist, it doesn't mean that these people are like doing something that they normally wouldn't be doing. Like they're pissing away their money in other ways, right? Like they're looking for a way, they're getting tricked by ruses and all these other scam artists, these snake oil salesmen in other ways, but this is the new thing and it's much easier to get involved. So I think ultimately their story is going to be bad. It's going to be just like everybody else who bought that, you know, great plot of land in swampland Florida, and it turned out to be worth nothing. So
now those people called the SEC though.
Yeah, exactly. And you do,
and I wonder if that's going to happen now. What do you think in that?
Yeah, no, I definitely think they're going to do that. I mean, who else are they going to call? They're going to call, you know, an offshore exchange, and they're going to get a boo, 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 you know, and they're going to get nothing. So they're going to obviously go to the SEC or whoever their law enforcement, you know, arm is around them.
But here's what's different now. Bitcoiners of 2013 were very much ideologically aligned with the libertarian principles of little governance to no governance in their life. What do you think about this new generation of ICO investor? Do you think they still follow those principles, or do you think that this is a different breed?
No, I think there's still an undercurrent of that, but I think that this has grown beyond that niche audience. I mean, you know, just the type of people that we've had get involved with our project and stuff over the last few years has certainly changed. I think a lot of that libertarian community are tend to be more on the holder side now and are looking at it as this digital gold and aren't looking to do massive speculation. But I have heard of people dabbling. So I think this new group of people kind of coming in is a completely different wave. And you know, some of it may be just, you know, the alpha bays and these darknet markets are getting more and more popular. It's becoming more of a normal thing for people to be a part of that, college kids and younger people. And I think that is bringing them into the space and encouraging them to explore it more. And then they go, hey, I need more money for the markets, so why don't I just double down or do some margin trading here or there? It's super simple, or gamble. And, you know, ultimately, I think it's going to be bad for a lot of people. But you're right. I mean, where do they go if they have problems? That's going to be a huge issue. And I think that's going to bring a lot of heat into the ICO market. Like right now, it's almost like you see these smiles on people's face, like they really pulled something over on the government, like they don't know what's going on. But you know, ultimately, they may be behind. They're gonna figure it out at some point, and they're gonna start coming after these people. I mean, we saw that with the Silk Road, right? Like when what's his name up in New York? You know, he saw he was shown the Silk Road, and he was like, "That's it. We're going after him." And I think that there's going to be that pivotal moment with some of these crowd funds. It's not gonna cut it.
What I see here is people are playing musical chairs with their investments. They are putting money into these alts for the purposes of experiencing a ride, hopefully getting out at the right time, and then pulling their money back before the next guy. And of course, the last guy standing is the one without a chair. I see that there's a lot of people who are here to speculate, and there aren't enough options for them seemingly with Bitcoin. So they are moving into the alts so that they can leverage at some degree, or at least certainly expose themselves to effectively random fluctuations in the market for personal gain, hopefully. I think what I would ask you then is there in fact any utility to any of these ICOs that you have found thus far? Do you see one ICO that you see solving a problem more efficiently than Apache?
I don't see them solving any problem that we couldn't also solve with something on Bitcoin, which is my biggest gripe. But yeah, I mean, I think functional. I mean, I think conceptually there are some ideas that we would love to solve, right? Like having some kind of decentralized reputation or identity system. Yeah, that would be great, but we know that that's a very challenging problem to solve, and like these guys are not solving it right now. And we also need some kind of decentralized storage. We'd love to be able to break away from just dumping it into Amazon all the time or whatever, but that's another challenging problem that has its own issues. So, you know, the ideas are very, it's gratifying to think that like we could accomplish these things, and that it would be great if we just dump all our money, we all pool our stuff together and like help these guys just bootstrap and like make it happen. But it's not really, if you have any kind of technical background, you realize that these problems are not easily solved, and it's going to take, you know, billions of dollars and a lot more time than like 6 months to get there. So ultimately, the ideas are somewhat interesting, but the execution is far from being proven. And you know, that's ultimately my question is like, yeah, it's easy to raise the money from a bunch of people that you just market to and get to do that. I mean, look at OneCoin. There's like nothing to that, and they're raising so much money flying private jets. So there's clearly a lot of capital that people are willing, that are just eager to lose and give away. And there's starting to be a lot more people to accept it. So I don't know.
Are we in an ICO bubble? And if so, when the bubble bursts, will it take the Bitcoin price down with it, or will it strengthen the Bitcoin price as capital moves back into Bitcoin?
Jesus, I thought we were in a bubble a year ago, and it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger. I mean, the Dow, I ultimately thought that would deflate all of this, you know, significantly, and it seems to just, people just seem to ignore it completely and just keep on pushing. In fact, it sounds like they're going to do a second Dow, which is just, ludicrous, because I'm sure that like 98% of the people that invested in the original Dow will still dump their money back into the second one. So it would be hugely interesting if it crashed again. But it's a bad scenario, I think.
So you think it's a bubble. And that being said, if the bubble bursts, or when the bubble bursts, what will happen to the Bitcoin price? Will the Bitcoin price go up or go down?
That's a really great question. Well, you know what? Yeah. I think a lot of, the bubble as a whole, I don't think that the whole ecosystem is going to collapse like simultaneously, in my opinion. I think some of these bigger ones may fail here and there, like they've been doing, and probably get sprung up as other projects. But you know, this group of, you know, developers working on all these different ICOs have been extremely resilient. I mean, they rename their project and they come back from the ashes and somehow seem to raise another $20 million with the same exact idea, and a few different faces. But so I don't know. I wouldn't underestimate any of this, but I think, you know, it is a bubble. The fact that we're seeing crypto hedge funds and kind of like the next iteration of this is super fascinating. But you know, I don't know. It's been years. I've thought this stuff is going to go down. I think there's a lot of, you know, my I've seen and talked to a lot of people that are trying to get projects off the ground, and they're not getting interest from traditional VCs. They just don't care about Bitcoin projects that much. They don't see much value in it, as far as I can tell. There's very little outside of like the crypto specific funds. You know, these traditional funds are just not like super fascinating. They're actually buying up Bitcoin itself and just sitting on it, just like the rest of us. So, you know, if you're trying to get a product off the ground, this is an alternative. And, you know, I think as long as that's viable, it's going to keep growing.
I think that it depends on how it goes down. If the SEC moves in, the SEC might do one of two things. They might make all of these cryptocurrencies inaccessible to people, in which case Bitcoin would go down. Or they may selectively choose ICOs, maybe Gnosis or something like that, at which time people will seek safe refuge, I think, in something like Bitcoin, which is not so easily subpoenaed and restricted. Which brings me to my next question. There's a lot of people on Twitter who are telling me that, in fact, the SEC cannot regulate this space and that this will, in fact, be the de facto model for fundraising going forward. Do you believe the SEC can regulate this space?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think what will happen is that people will start to protect themselves a little bit more. You know, like, I think it's a lot like selling drugs on Craigslist. It's like way out in the open. And it's like, you, as long as you can get away with it, then you're going to keep doing it. But then after the majority of people are starting to get busted because they're cracking down on it, then they move to something better. And I think right now it's just like, it's like blatantly thumbing your nose at the SEC. But as soon as they start kind of trying to crack down on it and regulate it and do things, they're going to start pushing it more underground or to other forums. So I think it will evolve past that. But I don't think ultimately they can regulate it very well.
I think what will happen is they will regulate it very well in Western countries. I think that you will see fewer and fewer people with a pedigree and an affinity that people would want to invest in representing these projects. You'll end up with anonymous hacker types or Chinese and Russian types, at which point the liquidity will dry up significantly because investor faith will have diminished. That would be my
prediction. But how do you think that will happen? I mean, they have not proven their ability to understand this technology whatsoever, and they certainly are well behind the trick.
Well, here's what's crazy to me. First off, I see Hamilton as a scalping Ponzi being enforced in the SEC. Now, keep in mind that is at some level also a bearer instrument project whereby tickets have some face value. They're not necessarily someone's name. And in that particular case, I don't think that it was that hard for them to enforce. What's crazy to me is that they chose that as their low-hanging fruit when you have projects like Gnosis, which is blatantly disregarding significantly more laws and making more money. So,
but they say they've worked over a year to shore up the regulatory issues and make sure that this is legally sound. Over a year, they said.
But nobody knows what the law is. That's impossible. It has to go to court. It has to be tested. And my suspicion is that the SEC knows that as well. I've heard rumors to the effect that they are planning a campaign of sorts to regulate this space. But, you know, it's hard for me to qualify those. And I can't actually attest to the source of these rumors, other than I've heard it from multiple places. Who knows? So here's my next question for you. And we're going to wrap it up here pretty soon. Someone's going to do a mega ICO for a decentralized market very similar to yours. And at that time, they're probably going to raise substantial amounts of money. So my question to you is, as a business owner who is not ICOing, what is your incentive not to ICO? And then contrast that with what is your incentive to push for regulations against those who aren't going through the legal channels and the regulatory channels that you're going through?
Okay. So incentives for not doing an ICO. You know, I think, you know, clearly if capital needing to be invested in our business was the only thing that we were concerned about, then yes, an ICO probably would seem pretty attractive. But we have managed to be lucky enough to raise a good amount of capital. And I think we're doing a good job of managing that capital and working with our partners to make sure that we're being smart about how we use it. And I think that ultimately is more important than raising a ton of money up front and then mismanaging it and having the wrong type of people involved. So, yeah, I mean, there may be someone may come along and raise that money. I wouldn't.
Brian, let me stop you. That's fine corporate talk. And you can give that to a lot of people and you can even try to give that to me, but I'll stop you. What happens when the community rallies around an investment in the way that they rallied around Steemit because they are personally invested in it and they start producing images, content, listings, etc. for this project who I know will end up failing because it's a Ponzi. but which comes at consequence to your market because this is time and effort not invested in your market. Not to mention the theoretical number of man years that adds to their development time, which they probably won't use, but conceivably could accelerate their development faster than you could accelerate your development. Do you think that cannibalizes some of your business?
Well, I think any competition would, even shitty competition. But no, I mean, ultimately, we haven't seen that. I don't know what they could bring to the table other than
we're prognosticating.
Let me ask you this. So you brought up Steemit. I mean, where is Steemit? Do you think ultimately that was a sustainable model? I mean, you just said that you think it's going to fail. So what the hell does it matter if they show up, they raise $100 million, they bring attention to decentralized marketplaces, and then they fucking fail, and we're still around and we're doing things in a more
investor, the investors have been soured at that point. They're unlikely to invest in the next Steemit, would be my suspicion. So that capital is burned. I don't know about it either. That would be my argument. Nobody knows about that. That's what we're doing. We're trying to figure this out. We're speculating. My guess would be that the terms in which you have fundraised were significantly more onerous than the terms being offered to ICO pitchers.
Oh yeah, it wasn't $10 million at 4% of the company.
So there you go. So then if you have two companies in a vacuum, they're competing. One is getting cushy ICO terms and one is getting traditional VC terms. Which of those models do you think is going to result in more capital being raised?
Well, obviously it's going to be the ICO, but I mean, that's not the
Let's take a business besides yours. Let's just take Acme Corporation. In this model where Acme is going through traditional VC terms, what is their incentive to use a VC? Is there, in fact, none? Or conversely, if they do use it a VC, what is their incentive to call the SEC and to report their competitor for what is probably a Howey test violation?
I think, you know, yeah, I mean, I think I'm thinking about the second one more because we already brought that up. But I mean, I think there's a strong incentive to try and fuck your competitor. I mean, like that happens all the time, right? Like, I mean, people play that game all the time. So I don't doubt that that would be something that people would want to explore, especially if you believe that it is a violation. But, you know, I mean, I think, you know, the advantage of having traditional VC over an ICO, there's plenty of reasons. I mean, I don't know if they're like amazing reasons. I mean, certainly when we were beginning to raise VC, the reasons why we weren't even trying to necessarily start a company. We were just looking for ways to sustain our project, and ICOs were not really like super hot at the moment. So I think if it was back then, we might even be considering ICO more because we would have been more desperate. So I don't know. I think, you know, with traditional VC, we've seen, you know, if you want to go the more straightforward, normal route for how your business is built and you want to attract employees that actually, feel it's important to have like a something, you know, consistent, and they understand how your business is constructed and how it's regulated and things like that, then it may be more attractive to get traditional VC. I don't know if you look at some sketchy ICO group and they're asking you to come and commit, you know, you have kids and family and you're a 25-year experienced programmer, you may not think that's a viable option for a career. So I think that there's certainly a demographic of people that you might want involved with your company, and they just aren't willing to play in the ICO space right now.
Brian, last question for you, Brian. Last question and we're done. Do you believe that the restriction of ICOs would in fact be an aggregate efficiency for the market?
An efficiency?
Meaning, will we have greater outcomes of products and services for consumers with less waste?
Yeah, I do. I think it would. Because, yeah.
All right. You heard it here first. Brian Hoffman believes in regulation as an efficiency. Brian? Thanks for being on the show. Where can people find out more about you?
They can go to ob1.io and find out more about the company, or openbazaar.org.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for coming on BU.